We begin today in a new series. I'm going to invite you to take your copy of the scriptures and turn to Genesis chapter 37. Now, those of you who know me know that there are certain passages of the scriptures that I really enjoy. I like the Old Testament, and I like the New Testament. But I really love the book of Genesis. There are some great, great stories in the book of Genesis. And one of the greatest, I believe, is the story of this man, Joseph, that we're going to spend the next few weeks just looking at. And I want to try to give you an overview today in order to prepare you for the specific teachings that God has for us about this man, Joseph, as we look at the next few weeks at this man's life. Joseph is one of two men outside of Jesus Christ himself about which nothing negative is said. He is a man who lived for his God that he seemed to embody the passage of Scripture that says, "There is no temptation that has overtaken you, but such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but will with that temptation make a way of escape." That passage brings tears to my eyes today, because in Joseph and in Daniel, we have the example that you can overcome. I know that I can overcome temptation because I see it in the man Joseph. I saw the things that he did in his story, and I get so frustrated when I don't overcome, when I can't follow his example. Well, let me tell you a little bit about Joseph here. First of all, he is the great-grandson of the man Abraham. Back in Genesis chapter 12, God calls a man named Abram out of Ur of the Chaldees, and he says, "Go to a land that I will show you." And Abraham, under the name of Abram, takes off, and he moves to a new land. And he follows God. Slowly but surely, he gets to the place where God wants him to be. And then he says to him in Genesis chapter 15, it's nighttime, and he says, "Abram, I want you to look up in the sky, and I want you to tell me what you see." And he says, "I see all the stars. There's just tons of them. They're everywhere." And he says, "Abram, someday that is going to be your seed. Your seed will be like the stars in the sky and the sand in the sea." And then God makes a covenant with him, and we won't go into all of that today. But in it, he says to him, basically, "Abram, nothing you can do is going to break this covenant, because I'm the one passing through the dead animals here, and I'm the one making the covenant that I will keep my word even if you don't keep yours." And he says to him at nearly 100 years of age, "Abram, I'm going to give you a son." Now, Abram, in his infinite wisdom, did all that he could, and as Abraham, he even tried more to help God along with this through the servant girl Hagar and through his own servant that he wanted to turn into his son and adopt. And God kept saying, "No, you don't understand. I'm going to give you a son." In Genesis chapter 18, God visits him in the form of the pre-incarnate Jesus Christ and two angels. And they come and they sit in his tent and they say, "Now, a year from now, your wife is going to have a baby." Now, Sarah's listening behind the tent flap. You know, we go out to Algonquin, and one of the things that you can do in Algonquin as you're laying in your tent is you can hear what everybody else is thinking. You can hear the loons on the lake, you can hear the fish when they jump in the water, and you can hear every guy that snores. You know, there's just not a lot of privacy between tent flaps. And so you go out and you're out in a tent and you're going to hear everything that's going on. And here is Sarah behind a tent flap, and she's listening to these four people talking, and she hears the prediction that in a year she's going to have a baby, and she laughs. She laughs. In fact, she names her son Laughter. His name becomes Isaac. And she laughs, and Jesus says, the pre-incarnate Jesus, why does Sarah laugh? And she goes, I didn't laugh. I'm 90 years old. What's wrong with you? But she has a baby. His name is Isaac. In Genesis chapter 22, Abram takes his only son up on the mountain, Mount Moriah, the future place of the temple, and he offers him as a sacrifice, and God stops him just in time. But Hebrews chapter 11 makes it clear that Isaac was going to be there no matter what, so that he believed that God would actually raise Isaac from the dead if necessary. Well, Isaac didn't have to die, and Isaac had two sons, Esau and Jacob. Esau came out first, they were twins, but Jacob ended up winning the birthright by deceit. Jacob then becomes the one through whom God is going to send his seed. He's going to send his son. And Jacob goes on and he has 12 sons. The two youngest are Joseph and Benjamin by the wife that he wanted so much to marry, but was conscripted into service for 21 years under Laban, his father-in-law, the wife Rachel. Rachel dies in childbirth with Benjamin, but she has Joseph and Benjamin for him. Joseph, in Genesis chapter 37, becomes the focal point of the rest of the book of Genesis. One or two places where it takes a little bit of a sidetrack, but for the most part, from Genesis 37 to Genesis 50, we focus on the man Joseph. And I want you to look, if you would, at Genesis chapter 37 and notice a couple of things, because we're going to look at an overview of his life today and then come back and look in more microscopic view to the man Joseph throughout the course of the next few weeks. Genesis chapter 37. Now Jacob dwelt in the land where his father was a stranger, in the land of Canaan. That is, Jacob dwelled in Canaan. His father Isaac was a stranger there. His father Abraham was a stranger there. Abraham never owned land, nor Isaac, in the land of Israel, except what little plot of land that he bought at the cave of Machpelah in order to bury his bride. If it weren't for that, Abraham would have not owned any land in the land of Israel. This is the history of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old, was feeding the flock with his brothers, and the lad was with the sons of Bilhah, the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives, and Joseph brought a bad report of them to his father. Now, the closest thing we can say about Joseph is that he was a tattletale. The most negative thing we can say, but somehow, if you take some time and read from Genesis chapter 32 all the way up to Genesis chapter 36, you can figure out real quick why Joseph probably tattled. Because the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah were sons of Jacob, and the other 10 sons of Jacob were real rabble-rousers and troublemakers. They did all kinds of things, and they were frankly pretty sadistic and pretty cruel men. And Joseph brought the report to his father, and Israel loved Joseph more than all his children because he was a son of his old age. And also he made him a tunic of many colors. Now this thing, the tunic of many colors, was a symbol of Jacob's love. Let me try to give you a little bit of a picture about that tunic and what that tunic was about. First of all, Jacob's love was shown in the tunic in this way. It was an expensive piece of clothing, and it was given to Joseph for him to wear on a daily basis. It did two things. The first thing that it did is it elevated Joseph above all the other brothers as a shepherd. He was more of a manager of the shepherds now. He had risen out of the ranks and he became the top guy in Jacob's organization. The second thing that it did is it said to all the other brothers, the other 11 brothers, this guy is getting the inheritance. Now in the Middle East, the inheritance goes this way. First of all, two portions are given to the oldest, and then all the other pieces are broken up in the number of children that you have. So let me explain. If you have two children, you break your inheritance up into three pieces. Two-thirds go to the oldest son, and then one-third goes to the other son. And by the way, ladies, I'm sorry, but in Old Testament situations, women didn't get anything. So you were left out in the cold. But if you have three sons, you break it up into four pieces. Two pieces go to the oldest son. The other one piece, the other quarter, goes to the other two sons. So Jacob had 12 sons, which meant he was breaking it up into 13 pieces, and in those 13 pieces, then Joseph was going to get two pieces, and the other guys were going to get 1/13 of Jacob's inheritance. Okay, everybody with me? By wearing the coat of many colors, Joseph was saying, I'm accepting the inheritance, and Jacob's love was saying, I'm giving the inheritance to Joseph. Now, Joseph was not the oldest. He was next to the youngest. Reuben was the oldest. Reuben was supposed to get the title of oldest son, of inheritor. But the problem is that Jacob did not recognize Reuben, but he loved Joseph. Joseph's love, or Jacob's love for Joseph, would eventually get Joseph in all kinds of trouble with his brothers. But the same thing that happened to Jacob was now going to happen to Joseph, and that is Jacob was not to receive the inheritance. The two of them, Esau should have gotten 2/3 and Jacob gotten 1/3, but instead Jacob got the 2/3 and Esau got the 1/3 because he stole the birthright from his brother. Verses 5 to 11 give us an indicator of Joseph and what he was like. He got some dreams from God because of the things that that God was starting to reveal to him. Let's start in verse 4 where we left off. When his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all his brothers, they hated him and could not speak peaceably to him. Now, none of us in our peaceful, happy homes understand what that's like. Not one of us have ever had one of our children or siblings ever speak unpeaceably to us, I'm sure. But somehow in Jacob's home, that was not the case. And so Joseph had a dream, and he told it to his brothers, and they hated him even more. So he said to them, please hear this dream which I have dreamed. There we were binding sheaves in the field, and behold, my sheaf arose and stood upright, and indeed your sheaf stood around and bowed down to my sheaf. Okay, little brother. You know, it's about this time that I envisioned something like the Ponderosa and little Joe saying, you know, my horse stood upright and you're all your horses kind of bowed down to my horse. And I see Hoss walking over saying, we'll see about that, bub. I mean, you can imagine what it's like. I mean, these other 10 guys are just sitting there and they're thinking, who in the world does he think he is? He's just propagating all of this. Some people have interpreted this as an attitude of pride. May I submit to you that I think it probably is more the guy was 17 years old and naive, and he just thought, well, I'm just going to say it, and obviously they're going to accept it because obviously it's from God. So then he puts his foot in his mouth a little bit more. Verse 8, his brother said to him, shall you indeed reign over us, or shall you indeed have dominion over us? So they hated him even more for his dreams and his words. And then he dreams still another dream. Now, after the first one, I think he should have gotten the picture, you know? But he dreams another dream and told it to his brothers and said, look, I've dreamed another dream. And you can imagine this. I mean, just picture this. You know, you're all sitting around the dinner table, and Joseph, you know, he's halfway through his lamb chop, and he looks up and he says, hey, guys, I dreamed another dream. And they're all going, oh, man. Don't give me that stuff. I don't want to hear it. And he says, I've dreamed another dream. Look, I have, at this time, the sun and the moon and the 11 stars bowed down to me. And then he told it to his father and his brothers, and his father even rebuked him and said, what is this dream that you've dreamed? Shall your mother and I and your brothers indeed come and bow down to the earth before you? And his brothers envied him, but his father kept the matter in mind. His father rebuked him, but his father had had enough involvement with God to recognize that there was something behind this. What in the world does God want him to understand out of this? And so Jacob began to ponder these things and to think about them in his heart. Joseph's dreams began the problem of getting him in trouble. Then you run into Judah, who schemes against Joseph. Look at verse 12. Then his brothers went to feed their flocks in Shechem, and Israel said to Joseph, are not your brothers feeding the flock in Shechem? Come, and I will send you to them. Now, the point is here, recognize the culture. If Joseph were in his proper position, Joseph would have been out in the flocks, and Reuben would have been back at home. He would have been managing the books, and Joseph would have been out handling the flocks with his brothers. And Israel says, I will send you to them, so that he said to him, here I am. And then he said to him, please go and see if it is well with your brothers and well with the flocks, and bring back word to me. So he sent him out into the valley of Hebron, and he went to Shechem. And now a certain man found him, and there he was, wandering in the field. And the man asked him, what are you seeking? And he said, I am seeking my brothers. Please tell me where they're feeding their flocks. And the man said, they have departed from here, and I heard that they heard them say, let us go to Dothan. So Joseph went after his brothers and found them in Dothan. Now, when they saw him afar off, even before he came near to them, they conspired against him to kill him. 10 brothers are out in the field doing the work that they feel like Joseph ought to also be doing, and they come back and they begin to come after Joseph in their mind. They have started to think, I'm tired of this guy. I'm sick of the way that he's acting. I'm getting tired of his lording everything over us. I'm getting tired of our father loving him more than he loves us. I'm getting tired of all of these things. Let's kill him. And the interesting thing is that when they saw him, they said to one another, look, this dreamer is coming. Come, let us come, therefore. Let us now kill him and cast him into some pit, that we shall say some wild beast has devoured him, and we shall see what will become of his dreams. But Reuben heard it. Remember who Reuben was? He was the oldest. He was the one whose birthright Joseph stole, or in his mind would have stolen. But Reuben heard it, and he delivered him out of their hands and said, let us not kill him. He was the firstborn, and he got the message real quick, this is wrong. But Reuben said to them, shed no blood, but cast him into this pit which is in the wilderness, and do not lay a hand on him, that he might deliver him out of their hands and bring him back to his father. His plan was, throw him in the pit, and he said, now look guys, let's just toss him in the pit, let the wild animals kill him, don't let his blood be on our hands. And then later, Reuben was going to come back and get him out of the pit and take him back to his father and save his life. And so, at least Reuben had honorable intentions in mind. So it came to pass when Joseph had come to his brothers that they stripped Joseph of his tunic, the tunic of many colors that was on him, that is, the thing that represented his birthright and his authority over them. And they took him and cast him into a pit, and the pit was empty. There was no water in it. They sat down to eat a meal, and when they lifted their eyes and looked, there was a company of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead with their camels, bearing spices, balm, and myrrh on their way to carry them down to Egypt. And Judah said to his brothers, what profit is there if we kill our brother and conceal his blood? Come, let us sell him to the Ishmaelites, and let our hand be not upon him, for he is our brother in our flesh. And his brothers listened. Judah was so noble, wasn't he? Hey, you know, we don't want to be guilty of murder. Let's just sell him into slavery. Sell him to the Ishmaelites here. Let them do with him what they want. The Midianite traders passed by, and the brothers pulled Joseph up and lifted him out of the pit and sold him to the Ishmaelites for 20 shekels of silver. And they took Joseph to Egypt. At least inflation by the time of Christ had brought the value of a human life up to 30 shekels. You see, Joseph is a type of Christ in the Old Testament. And in the New Testament, Jesus Christ was betrayed by those that were his brothers too. And betrayed for next to nothing. This was not a huge sum. Just a little drinking money for those guys. Just a little money to go out and party a bit. And Reuben returned to the pit, and indeed Joseph was not in the pit, and he tore his clothes. And he returned to his brothers and said, the lad is no more. Where shall I go? So they took Joseph's tunic and killed a kid of the goats and dipped the tunic in blood. And then they sent the tunic to many of many colors, and they brought it to their father and said, we have found this, but we do not know whether your son's tunic or not. And he recognized it and said, it is my son's tunic, and a wild beast has devoured him. Without a doubt, Joseph is torn to pieces. Then Jacob tore his clothes, put sackcloth on his waist, and mourned all for his son many days. And all his sons and all his daughters arose to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted and said, for I shall go down into the grave to my son in mourning. Thus his father wept for him. And the Egyptians, or the Midianites, had sold him in Egypt to Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh and captain of the guard. We have here Jacob's love and Joseph's dream that got him into trouble by voicing what God had told him, Judah's scheme, and then finally Jacob's sorrow. Jacob's sorrow brought the man Joseph to where God wanted him to be. Now let me give you an overview of the rest of Joseph's life. Joseph begins serving in Potiphar's house. He is such a good steward of Potiphar's wealth that Potiphar puts him over the whole house. And you all know the story. After a while, Potiphar's wife starts to lust after Joseph, and on repeated attempts, she keeps trying to seduce him and get him to get involved with him in an adulterous situation. And then after a while, Joseph is caught in the house with no other servants around, and Potiphar's wife comes in and again goes after him, and he literally runs from her, and he makes some very key statements. Should I not only not sin against my master and against God also? And in the process of that, he runs away and he leaves his coat behind. And again, his coat becomes evidence of something that is false about Joseph. First, about his death. Now, about his integrity. Because Potiphar's wife brings it to her husband and says, this man tried to rape me. And Joseph gets thrown into prison as a slave. Now, the good thing is that he was thrown into prison in Pharaoh's prison. After a while, he's in prison there and he meets two men. One is the baker and one is the butler for Pharaoh. Now, these guys are very trusted employees of Pharaoh, and they're thrown into prison because of suspicion that was brought against them. I suspect, because of the nature of their work, that there was a plot against Pharaoh's life. And because these two men were close to Pharaoh, and one sampled the wine and the food, and the other made the food. And so there was opportunity to kill Pharaoh through his belly. And so what they did was they threw them into prison until they could figure out who was who. Joseph hears that they've been having dreams, interprets the dreams, and we'll talk about what specifically they are later. And then eventually one is killed, the one who apparently was plotting against him, the baker, and the butler, the cupbearer, the wine bearer, was freed and brought back into Pharaoh's house. But he forgot about Joseph. He forgot all about him. And then eventually, Pharaoh starts having dreams. And none of his seers can understand them, and they can't interpret them. And so eventually, the butler says, you know, I remember this guy in prison. He interpreted my dream and the butler's dream, and he did it accurately. Maybe you'd want to talk to him, Pharaoh. And so Pharaoh brings him into his presence. He interprets a dream, and in the process of interpreting the dream, he predicts 7 years of feast and then 7 years of famine. And Pharaoh says, okay, fine. What should we do? And Joseph suggests, get somebody as a steward over all of this to kind of take care of all of this stuff for you and have somebody administrate it. And he said, who better but you, Joseph? And Joseph goes from prisoner in one day, from prisoner to being second in command in the land of Egypt. And eventually, the famine that hits the land spreads all the way up to Israel, all the way up to the land of Canaan. And Jacob and his family are all starving. And in the process of starvation, they go to Egypt where they hear that there is grain that can be bought. And eventually they come into the presence of Joseph and they try to buy grain. And Joseph does a couple of different things in order to check their integrity and check whether or not they are truly repentant about what they've done to him some 20 years before. Eventually, Joseph reveals himself to his brothers. And they're fearful. Wouldn't you be? Joseph begins to show who he really is and the integrity that he has because he's not over 20 years held this against them. He forgave them and he moved on 20 years before. And then he brings all of his family down to Egypt. And they live in the land of Goshen. Now, if you've ever been to Egypt, you understand that the delta of the Nile River is in the northern part. It's the most lush area of Egypt. That's the area that Jacob was moved to. And God allowed Joseph to be second in command to bring his father down and put him in a place that was just the most beautiful place on the face of the earth at the time. And have his whole family there. And eventually Jacob dies. Genesis chapter 49, Jacob puts his blessing on everybody. And in Genesis chapter 46, the sons realize that Jacob is no longer, and they begin to ask, what's going to happen here? Now that Dad's dead, what's Joseph really going to do? Is he really going to show his true colors? Joseph pulls him aside, and he said, listen, guys, you meant it for evil, but God meant it for good. If there's anything that we get out of the story of Joseph, it's this. Whatever comes into our life is meant for our good. Boy, is that a tough one to swallow. But, you know, have you ever been sold into slavery? Joseph was. Were you ever accused wrongly of some heinous crime? Joseph was. Were you ever thrown into prison and just forgotten forever? Joseph was. All because of the sinful act of 10 brothers who hated him. And yet he turned around and he said to them, you meant it for evil. Let's not miss that point. Your heart is deceitful and desperately wicked beyond all recognition. Who can possibly know it? But God took what you meant for evil, and He meant it for good. Now, what's the faith lesson that we can get out of all of this? Joseph went from favored son to rejection, to slavery, to betrayal, to forgotten, to second ruler in the land, and finally he was put in a position to exact his own judgment on those who began the whole process, more than 20 years of rejection of his life. And in the process of that, the overriding theme in the story of Joseph is, you meant it for evil, but God meant it for good. The 20th century martyr Dietrich Bonhoeffer observed that Satan, when tempting, does not fill us with hatred of God, but with forgetfulness. Joseph was able to overcome his trials of rejection by his family, false accusation by his master's wife, abandonment in Pharaoh's prison, undiminished focus in the purposes of God for his life were there. And as a result, he was raised to the dizzying heights of nearly unlimited power. Joseph is free of bitterness and a vengeful spirit, and this man is of unsullied integrity is now the one who can act with unrestrained forgiveness because he kept his eyes on the goal. Let me ask you this. Do you forget the blessings of God? Our faith lesson today is this and this alone. The blessings of God are something that we should focus on every day of our life, because when things come into our life that are going to sidetrack us and move us away from who God is and what He's accomplished in our life, we have to remember that God means it for good. God teaches us day by day how to live for Him. Even when other people try to sidetrack us and help us to forget. Did you know that God has a purpose for your life? Did you know that God has you singled out to accomplish certain things that are significant for Jesus Christ? He has gifted you in a unique way. He has accomplished for you unique things. He has placed you in unique situations and with unique people so that you can make a difference for Him. We put it this way in this church. God has placed you where you are so that you can change lives by meeting people where they are and moving them to become fully devoted followers of Christ. Let me ask you, do you wake up every morning and say, God, show me who I can move one step closer to you today? Show me how I can do this or how I can do that for you, God. Show me what I can do to make a difference in the lives of other people today. Show me how I can proclaim Jesus Christ today. Or do you wake up every morning and say, oh man, Lord, I cannot believe you put me in this dead-end job. I can't believe you put me with this bunch of people. I can't believe that I have to deal with all these losers all the time. God, I can't believe that I've got to get up again. Why couldn't you just make me rich? I could accomplish so much more for you, God, if I were that way. I could see so much more done, Father, if I just had all the money to not have to work and just do whatever it is you want me to do. What's happening in your life? What's going on in your life on a daily basis that can make a difference for Jesus Christ? And what can you learn from it? Let me tell you what Joseph learned. Joseph learned that just because your brothers hate you and do something out of a knee-jerk reaction that is morally and ethically wrong to you, that forgiveness can still happen. You didn't have to wait for them to come and ask for forgiveness. He forgave them. He wept for them before they ever knew who he was. Let me tell you what Joseph learned. Joseph learned that even when he is wrongly accused and wrongly approached and he stands for integrity, there are times when people are not going to understand it. They will mean it for good or for evil, but God will accomplish his good through it if he just stands strong, if he keeps his eyes fixed on the goal. Let me tell you what Joseph learned. Joseph learned that even when he was forgotten and left alone in prison, just wasting away there, that he could still accomplish great things for him. In that prison cell, he became the guy who administrated the prison. And I think that God started to teach Joseph way back in his father's house, this is what you can do that can make a difference. And he taught him how to administrate. And then when he got into Potiphar's house, he became an administrator of the household and he took care of the household. He got thrown into prison and he became an administrator of the prison and he got word or strength over the prison or power over the prison in the sense that he was still a prisoner, but he was able to go and do what he wanted to do there. So when he came into Pharaoh's presence, Joseph already knew what God had for him because he had already been serving God. Not his father, not Potiphar, not the jailer, God. Do you go to work every day thinking about the God you are serving that day or the boss that you're working for? Do you come home every night and think about the people that you need to minister to that day, that evening in your home and in your neighborhood and around the city because you are a servant of the Most High God? Do you look at your problems and you say, I can never overcome these things? Or do you look at them and say, God, teach me through them. Show me what it is I need to learn so that I can make a difference for you. Do your difficulties drive you to criticism or do they drive you to your knees? Do your frustrations drive you into anger or do they drive you to your knees? Does God make a difference in your life? Or does life make a difference in your God?